Michael Mukasey for Attorney General is on hold for the time being. SRN's Linda Kenyon has this update from Capitol Hill.
The Mukasey nomination hinges on how he clarifies his views in writing on interrogation techniques, including so-called waterboarding. Senators want to know whether Mukasey thinks waterboarding amounts to torture. Many say it does, and they're troubled by Mukasey's answers on the topic during his confirmation hearings. One leading Democrat on the committee says unless Mukasey is prepared to say that waterboarding is torture, he may not get the number of votes needed for a favorable recommendation by the full Senate Judiciary Committee.
And today, a Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee says he might consider opposing Mukasey's nomination for Attorney General if he says waterboarding is not torture. Senator Lindsey Graham on CBS's Face the Nation joined two top Senate Democrats in urging Mukasey to disclose his views. A tragedy in North Carolina. A fire swept through a beach house believed occupied by college students. Authorities say six people were killed and several more were sent to a hospital. Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina Mayor Debbie Smith was asked about the people staying at the home.
It was a private residence. One of the owner's daughters, family members were there with some friends.
One person is still reported missing. First Lady Laura Bush is defending her husband in the wake of Democrat attacks on his veto of the Children's Health Care Expansion Program.
The president already proposed an expanding of this in eight states in the United States. Now, SCHIP money, more SCHIP money is being spent on adults than on children. And this is a program that was devised and made for children.
Mrs. Bush spoke on Fox News Sunday. Top U.S. commander in Iraq says while al-Qaeda is less of a problem in Baghdad, it's still a very dangerous enemy. The comments by General David Petraeus were underscored by the abduction of 10 Sunni and Shiite tribal leaders. This is SRN News.
You're listening to News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder how a loving God could allow 500,000 people to vacate their homes, and for many of these people to discover their homes destroyed, a whole lifetime of possessions and irreplaceable sentiment lost in flames and lost in smoke forever. Well, we have done many shows in the past exploring the question, how come bad things happen to good people? And we will do such shows again. It's not our topic today, but I certainly didn't want to start the show without saying anything about the fire. That would be a pretty obvious topic to ignore. For the last week, the Great Southern California Fire has been practically the only thing discussed on radio and television. And I suspect many of you are ready to move on to something else and hear a different radio show. Not the ones who lost their homes. If you lost your home, that's the only thing that will be on your mind for a long time. I do understand, and our hearts go out to you. All of us who live in San Diego wondered if we were going to lose our homes. Most of us packed some things, gathered together some important documents, and prepared to evacuate if necessary. Many of my close friends did need to evacuate. This will be with us for a long time, and we will discuss it for weeks to come, months to come, probably years to come. Still, on today's program, we're going to take a break from the fire because there's an important event coming up this weekend, and we need to let you know all about it. Several times in the past, I've had representatives from Arabic Christian Perspective on the Bob Siegel Show. They honored me recently by asking me to moderate a debate. Now, usually in debates, I'm one of the debaters. I'm one of the two opponents. This will be a switch for me and certainly a switch off for my big mouth. Obviously, I can talk on my own radio show, but I'm going to be quite quiet and just seeing that these guys give each other the respect and time they deserve this weekend, which is Saturday, November 3rd. at Hope International University in Fullerton. I will be the moderator of a debate which asks the question, is Islam a religion of peace? Now, as kind of a preview, both opponents are joining me today by phone, and we'll bring them on in just a few minutes, not to actually have the same debate, but to talk about some related issues. If you'd like to call in and join in with the discussion, our toll-free number is 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. We also take email questions and comments, questions at bobsiegel.net. That's questions at bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. And I will begin today by reading a few email responses to last week's program. Now, last week, among other things, I did a mock interview with Hillary Clinton. Her responses were recorded outtakes from The Wicked Witch of the West on The Wizard of Oz, very familiar outtakes. And our first letter regarding this is from Rachel in La Mesa. Rachel says, Bob, I thoroughly enjoyed the show. Good content. I kept laughing during the Hillary interview. Quite creative. Loved the witch picture Nathaniel did. Thank you. Best regards, Rachel. Now, she refers to Nathaniel. Nathaniel's my son who helps me with the program and helps me with my website. If you go to the front page of my website, which is bobsiegel.net, you can see a picture of the Wicked Witch with Hillary's face superimposed. And from this picture, you can also click in and hear the interview in question without having to hear all of last week's show, although all of last week's show is also posted on my website. Our next letter is from our friend Peter, who listens to us all the way out in Maine. Peter writes, oh, Bob, you've outdone yourself with the Hillary interview. I love it. I've been a Wizard of Oz fan since I was a little kid. You have me rolling with laughter. And then he repeats, I do believe in spooks. I do, I do. I think he meant it to sound like the lion. I do believe in spooks. I do believe in spooks. I do, I do, I do, I do. And then he says, Peter says, Hillary, you have no power here. Be gone before someone drops a house on you too. Peter. Thanks, Peter. But I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, not everybody enjoyed the interview as Peter and Rachel did. This next letter is from Kathy. Bob, why do you equate Hillary Clinton with the Wicked Witch? If you are going to take on someone, do it without the use of demonizing someone you disagree with. This is not humor. You are more like Rush. Actually, Kathy, I like Rush. I know you didn't mean that as a compliment. I actually like Rush and find absolutely nothing wrong with Rush's humor. But I'll continue with Kathy's letter. She says, try looking up the history of equating women you don't like of witchcraft. This was a period in our history which was a Holocaust in and of itself against women. You have gone too far. By the way, I am not a fan of Hillary. Kathy. Well, I'm not a fan of Hillary either, Kathy, so I guess we can start with something we agree with. But Kathy, I do want to thank you for your letter. I know your anger is sincere, and I do not fault your motives or your desire to speak honestly. Let me just say that, to me, there is a difference between satire and demonizing someone, quote-unquote. I have people on my show who debate me all the time. All the time. I have never demonized them. I have never treated them with anything but respect. But I do think there is a place for humor and satire. In fact, I see Christians and conservatives humorously portrayed on shows like Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show all the time. And it doesn't bug me at all. Those programs are seldom, if ever, called mean-spirited. But then when a conservative does the same thing, there seems to be a double standard. Now, maybe that's not a double standard with you, Kathy. Maybe you write those programs and tell them that their parodies are inappropriate. Do you? But my point is, whether you do or not, such parodies do not bother me. And I feel free to do parody in reverse because it does work both ways. I also see Christians and conservatives literally, not through parody, but literally demonized in the media all the time. To me, an example of demonizing is when people compare George Bush to Hitler. I am hoping and assuming you would take offense with that as well. Now, I did not equate Hillary with any real witches. I think that was pretty obvious to anybody who heard this parody. In fact, if that had been my intention, I would have talked about Wicca. There are genuine witch covens we could have talked about if that had been my agenda. As a matter of fact, I did have a woman who had been a part of Wicca as a guest on my show. Now, she left the coven and she converted to Christianity, but she was treated with respect. The witch from The Wizard of Oz, on the other hand, is a humorous and beloved villain, more easily equated to a cartoon character than a real person. One more thing. Although I would never demonize a person simply for disagreeing with me, I do believe there are some people who are already evil and do not need to be demonized because they are already demonic without my help. I think this is actually true of Hillary, a woman who wants to shut down opposing viewpoints. I consider that pretty demonic. A woman who believes in partial birth abortion where babies are literally delivered and then have their brains sucked out. I believe someone like that should be challenged before our Western civilization ceases to exist. I speak out against her often and usually in plain serious talk, but there are different ways to communicate, and if satire also makes the point, so be it. It was not a comment about witches. It was a comment about Hillary. It was not a comment about women. Honestly, Kathy, you responded as if I was on some anti-feminist tirade. I think that's what was really bugging you. Now, I have stood up for women's rights and egalitarianism many times on this program. Unlike many of my fellow evangelicals, I have challenged the notion of wives submitting to their husbands. I've written about it. There's an article about it on my website. I taught about it just today in Sunday school. I have challenged churches who will not let women be pastors and leaders. I have received much flack from fellow Christians for my defense of women. So again, this was not about women and not about witches. It was about one particular woman. And I do believe this woman, Hillary, is an evil woman. I still want to thank you for your letter, Kathy. Warmest regards. Now, this next letter is from Angie. Angie's commenting on a different part of last week's program where I went on and talked about Israel. And as you know, there are many different opinions about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. I feel a lot of historical revision has gone on. She's responding to the facts that I shared. She says, "Hey, Mr. Bob, you haven't heard from me for a while. I'm the lady with the covenant view. I'm curious about where you got your info concerning what's being said about Israel now. What books have you been reading? Please let me know, okay? As I have been doing some studying in this area. Thanks, Angie." Yes, I do remember you, Angie, and I enjoyed your letter from before very much. You want some books? I would start with the book From Time Immemorial by Joan Peters. I actually did mention this book last week. Joan Peters was a famous magazine writer who set out to investigate the plight of the poor Palestinians. She came to realize that nothing, absolutely nothing, about what she'd heard in the Middle East was true. And by uncovering some of the original United Nations documents when they did give Israel the right to be a nation, she wrote a whole different book than the one she had been planning. Also, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Middle East by Michael Bard. Now, don't let that title throw you. There's a whole list of these books called The Complete Idiot's Guide. Nobody wants to read them because people are afraid they'll be viewed as an idiot. But Michael Bard, the author, is a PhD in Middle Eastern studies. And then a book called Philistine by Ramon Bennett. That's a more difficult book to find. But if you have trouble finding it, Angie, let me know and I might be able to track a copy down for you. I hope this helps. But Angie, I also want to challenge you about your view and your view for the sake of those listening who don't remember your previous correspondence, your view that forthcoming prophecy in the Bible really has nothing to do with Israel and is instead fulfilled in the church. Now, I mentioned before that I disagree with that view, but that isn't even my point. I don't mind that you have that view at all. Even if I agreed with you, even if we assumed just for argument's sake that you are right, I said last week that Israel's role in prophecy should not be a reason for evangelicals to take Israel's side, that there are better reasons to take Israel's side. Well, it works in reverse as well, Angie. Israel's lack of role in prophecy should not be a reason to not take Israel's side. I know that de-emphasizing the importance of Israel theologically is a passion of yours. I hope you won't make the mistake of allowing your theology to influence your opinion of world events. Modern Israel has been treated abominably by the world. That's just a fact, an indisputable fact. And those facts do not change simply because you take a preterist view. Hopefully, this is a conclusion you've already reached. Hopefully my words here were unnecessary, but even if you didn't need to hear them, Angie, other listeners do, and that's my challenge to Angie. Let me introduce now my two guests, and they are here by phone. And my apologies ahead of time, gentlemen, if I pronounce either of your names incorrectly. If I do, I'll let you pronounce my name incorrectly for a while. You can pay me back. First, Nadir Ahmad is a Muslim with good references from the Islamic Center of Peoria, Illinois. He has had two live in-person debates with evangelical professors. He regularly engages online discussions as well. He has debated such topics as the reliability of the Bible. I'd love to hear what he has to say about that. The reliability of the Quran, Islam and terrorism, and another book called Life Within the Limits of Biblical Morality. His opponent, who will be his opponent on Saturday and also spar with him a little bit over the radio today, Sam Shimon, is a scholar-writer featured on the website answeringislam.org. There are very few Christian websites responding to Islam, while there are hundreds of Muslim websites responding to Christianity. Sam Shimon is diligent in studying info. Sam Shimon and Nadir Ahmad, welcome, gentlemen, to my program.
Thanks. How you doing?
It's good to have both of you here. Mr. Shimon, this debate that you agreed to do, why don't we just start? I'm going to give each of you a chance. What was your interest in this debate that's coming up this weekend about whether Islam is a violent religion? Why did you agree to be a part of this debate?
Well, I just want to let the people know what the Quran and the so-called authentic traditions of Muhammad actually teach about Islam subjugating non-Muslims under the rule of Islam, and whether such a scenario comports with the claim of my opponent that Islam is peaceful.
Now, have you met Mr. Ahmad before?
Yeah, me and him, we have a long history. So.
Okay. Now, it sounds like, is your long history a history of friendship despite disagreement, or is it a disagreement with some tension? And it's okay either way.
Time's been bad, but we're hoping to put that behind us and do the best we can representing our religions with respect.
Well, let me start by complimenting both of you, because most people would not be willing to subject their position to a debate and have it scrutinized. So my kudos to both of you to start out with, whether we end up agreeing or disagreeing with each other. And Mr. Ahmad, what was your purpose in agreeing to do this debate coming up on Saturday?
Well, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what Islam teaches, as well as what Mr. Shimon was saying, the subjugation of the infidels. And unfortunately, these misconceptions have been trumpeted in the media, on Fox News, and there really hasn't been any Islamic response to that. And I'm hoping, you know, at least we can get our refutation out to these claims.
Okay, well, why don't you start by saying what do you think is the main mischaracterization of Islam, and how would you defend it? Let me give you a few uninterrupted minutes here. It's got to only be a few minutes, but why don't you take a few minutes right now and make your main case?
Yeah, I think the biggest misconception is people think that that when you look at people like Osama bin Laden and you know, Hamas and Hezbollah and all of these groups, somehow they're just being faithful to what their religion teaches them, and that's completely false. Islam has, from the very beginning, completely condemned terrorism, and that's what we're going to debate about, I believe, next week. So that's the first misconception. And also, a second misconception, and this is promoted by people like Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch, who, by the way, also ran away from a debate from me. But the second misconception is that they think that somehow they want to subjugate infidels to pay jizya, and that's the reason why September 11th happened, and that's nonsense. Okay, this is just completely, I think they're really missing the boat here. Okay, why these terrorism and all these things are happening, I mean, I'm not saying they're for good reasons, but what I know, it's not because they want jizya money from America. So obviously, there needs to be a debate on this issue when we find these type of misconceptions.
So you would categorically right now denounce all these terrorist organizations yourself?
I sit with the vast majority of Muslims in the world today, of course, because, and I tell you, we Muslims, we're the first victims of their terrorism.
Now, you mentioned Hamas, so I am assuming that's one of the terrorist organizations you would condemn?
Absolutely.
Would you condemn Jimmy Carter then for telling Israel that she should make deals with Hamas since Hamas was elected by the Palestinians?
Well, here's what we have.
That seemed like
we
a pretty anti-Semitic thing for Carter to do, in my opinion.
Well, let me give you my view on that. I mean, when we look at the problem inside the Middle East, we don't really have good options to choose from. We have very bad options to choose from. And supporting Hamas and negotiating with Hamas, as well as the IDF, I don't see the Israeli Defense Force any different from Hamas. I think both are rotten eggs in my basket.
No, wait a minute. A moment ago you said you renounced terrorism, but now you're saying you don't see any difference between Israel and the terrorists?
Absolutely.
Can you understand how some would listen to that and it wouldn't necessarily sound to them like you're renouncing terrorism?
Oh, no. Actually, both are killing innocent civilians. Both are engaging in just senseless violence against each other.
Well, you are aware that in Palestine, even at the kindergarten level, they're teaching that Israel has no right to even exist and that Israel should be wiped out. They're not actually arguing for a two-state solution.
Well, let me go back to the first point about the difference between Hamas and IDF, which you raised with me.
Sure.
Let me address that.
Sure.
Okay, let's look at the situation over here. We look at the actions of the IDF. You go to Amnesty International, you will find thousands of human rights violations committed by the IDF against the Palestinian people. And now when you look at that and you compare it to what Hamas is doing, I don't see a whole lot of difference there. The only difference is one's using F-16s to commit their terrorism and one's strapping a bomb to himself. In
okay,
my book, both are condemned.
Yeah, let's get Mr. Shimon in here. Mr. Shimon, I know your view on Islam. I actually don't know your view of Israel and Palestine. So for all I know, you might even agree with your opponent here. But let me give you a chance to respond to what he said. Would you agree that there's no difference between Israel and an organization like Hamas?
Well, again, I don't want to be supporting one side against the other if both are guilty of terrorist acts. I'm not saying that Israel is a state of terrorism, but I prefer to discuss what the Islamic sources say and not get into politics. This is what I was asked to debate. So I'd like to address the claims he made on what Islam teaches.
Okay. Go ahead and address that.
The first problem we have when we deal with Muslim apologists is that in chapter 3, verse 28 of the Quran, Muslim apologists like Nadir Ahmed, who live among the kafirin, meaning the unbelievers, are allowed to lie and deceive people in order to hide the true face of Islam. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read the verse. And then the commentary by Ibn Kathir, who's not Osama bin Laden, and he's not a terrorist, but a officially recognized Muslim scholar that Salafis like Nadir appeal to in understanding the text of the Quran.
Okay.
So this is what chapter 3, verse 28 says. Let not the believers take the disbelievers for their friends in preference to believers. Whoso does that has no connection with Allah unless it be that you guard yourselves against them, taking, as it were, security. That exception clause is interpreted by Muhammad's companion to mean that someone like Nadir can lie to the disbeliever about what Islam really believes, all the while smiling in their face. In fact, let me read what Ibn Kathir says, and I'd like Nadir to comment on what Abu Darda said, who is a companion of his prophet. This is what it says. Unless you indeed fear a danger from the meaning, accept those believers who in some areas or times fear for their safety from the disbelievers. In this case, such believers are allowed to show friendship to the disbelievers outwardly, but never inwardly. For instance, Al-Bukhari recorded that Abu Darda, and Abu Darda is a companion of Muhammad, a sahabi, we smile in the face of some people, although our hearts curse them. Al-Bukhari said that Al-Hassan said, the tuqya, meaning concealment, concealing Islam's true agenda, is allowed until the day of resurrection. So the first problem I have with Nadir's statements is, I don't know if I can trust him and if he's being forthright with what he really believes. Because his own Muslim scripture and scholars allow him to lie in the face of the unbelievers if it serves the true agenda of Islam.
Okay, I'm guessing that Mr. Ahmad doesn't feel that he's lying, but I'm going to give him a chance to respond to what you said when we come back. Very interesting discussion, gentlemen. Both of you, please hang with me over the break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Admit it. To be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it. Too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My guest joining me by phone, Nadir Ahmad, who is defending Islam, and Sam Shimon, who feels that Islam is a violent religion, not just in terrorism, but actually in the Quran. I'm going to be moderating a debate between these two gentlemen this November 3rd, this Saturday, at Hope International University in their Pacific Auditorium. The address for that is 2500 East Nutwood Avenue, Fullerton, California. Students are free. General public, $8. Registration is 1:30 p.m. The debate is 2 o'clock p.m. Gentlemen, welcome back to our show. And Nadir, I want to give you a chance to respond to some of the things that Mr. Shimon said before we went to the break.
Well, the first thing, which is kind of very disturbing of what he said, is that he doesn't seem to have a lot of knowledge on the politics and how Islam plays a role in the current events which we see today. Well, if you don't know this stuff, then it's going to be a long night for Mr. Shimon coming up next week. But the first misconception, actually, which I didn't hear a response from him for, is this idea which is promoted by people like Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch, who, by the way, did run away from a debate for me because he knew I was coming after him.
I'll tell you what. How about if I call Mr. Spencer and arrange a debate for the two of you on my show?
Well, he's going to run away. I already talked to him about that.
I don't know. I've seen him debate a lot of people.
He's scared of me because he knows what's going to happen next week.
I have the emails. This is a lie.
Yeah, I've seen him, the man, debate. He doesn't seem to run away from
it. And this is what he does.
This is my turn to talk.
Okay, well, gentlemen, one at a time. Let's go ahead and let Mr. Ahmad continue. Go ahead.
Let me continue. The whole thing is, now, I would love to see next week that, you know, when you look at these hooligans, the Hamas hooligans or the Hezbollah hooligans or the IDF hooligans, for that matter, I want to know, or even when you look at the actions of bin Laden, that the reason why they committed these gruesome attacks is because they want jizya money from us. I want to see evidence for that, okay? But people like Robert Spencer are not going to produce that for you, and that's going to show you how they're misleading people. Now, the issue about lying, what is it about what Mr. Darda said in Bukhari? Now, is that really relevant for this topic? You see, the thing is this. I could be the biggest liar on the face of this planet, but that really doesn't tell us a whole lot about whether Islam is a peaceful religion.
Well, I'll tell you what, gentlemen, let me exhort both of you away from the character assassination. Your facts ought to be able to speak for themselves.
Exactly, I agree.
Well, let me finish the thing about what Islam said about lying. Actually, you see, I think if I understand what Mr. Shimon, what he was quoting, I mean, I think he's quoting, like, if a Muslim is living, you know, in a state of persecution where there's Christians around him, and in order to save himself, he can lie. Okay, well, I don't have a problem with that. But can a Muslim be a liar? Now let's quote Muhammad, who is a prophet of Islam. Okay, he said, no, a Muslim cannot be a liar, but he can only lie in certain circumstances, and that is if there is an actual war, you know, or if there is, or if in the case to reconcile two people. But can we go around and telling everybody lies? No. Now, again, you know, let's not debate the issue about what Islam says about lying. Let's get back to the issues about the current events which are happening in our world today. We got thousands of people dying in Iraq. And we don't really have any good reason as to why that's happening. And let's stick to this topic over here.
Well, hold on. First of all, Al-Qaeda's involved in the fight in Iraq, and Al-Qaeda was responsible for 9/11. That would be a pretty good reason, wouldn't it?
Well, okay, let me respond to that.
The
whole thing is, and I think a lot of Republicans are going to agree with me on this. Before the Iraq invasion, Al-Qaeda had a very minimal presence inside Iraq. I mean, the amount of presence in Iraq Al-Qaeda had, you could say, in every Islamic country, and for that matter, Europe.
Yeah, but Saddam Hussein publicly congratulated Al-Qaeda on the day of 9/11. I think that was reason to go take him out right there,
don't you? Honestly, I don't care if Saddam Hussein had a one-night stand with Osama bin Laden. That still doesn't give us the right to invade Iraq. And what happened was when we invaded Iraq, thousands of people from Al-Qaeda recruited thousands of people, and now they do have a significant presence in Iraq. And honestly, I don't know how we're going to get rid of that. So the invasion of Iraq is actually what caused the Al-Qaeda presence.
Would you agree that the last time Al-Qaeda wrote a letter to the United States, it said, Americans be on notice, convert to Islam or die. So they're claiming that's their reason for fighting with us. Wouldn't you agree?
I read that letter. He didn't say convert to Islam or die. In almost all his letters, he tries to sound kind of orthodox by inviting the people to Islam, trying to trick the regular average Muslim to show that somehow he's a genuine Muslim, but he didn't say convert to Islam or die, and I don't think that's part of Al-Qaeda theology.
You don't think it's part of Al-Qaeda theology that the world should convert to Islam or die? What do you think their agenda is?
Well, I've listened to over 10 years of tapes, read their Al-Qaeda books, and listened to their lectures, and I've never heard them actually preach a forced conversion doctrine. Okay, at least I haven't heard it. Now, if it's out there, maybe I missed it.
Well, it sure sounded like that to me, but let's let Mr. Shimon go ahead, sir. We'll give you a few minutes to respond to this.
Let me go back. The reason why I want to stick with the original sources is because if Islam teaches that it's the obligation of Muslims to subjugate the world, then the audience can determine whether Al-Qaeda is faithful to the religious sources, their texts, or perverting it. So this is why I didn't want to debate whether Al-Qaeda is a true Muslim sect. What I want to discuss is what the Muslim sources say, and then examine their actions in light of what the Muslim sources themselves state about Muslims subjugating non-Muslims under the rule, the hegemony of Islam. Now, what's interesting is that Nadir just admitted that Muslims can lie when they're surrounded by the unbelievers, but that doesn't make them a liar.
In persecution.
So if you lie, you're not a liar. I really love that logic right there. But again, the issue is this. Now that Muslims are living in the land of unbelievers, the land of the kafirin, because they classify the West as the land of disbelievers, does that give them the right to lie in our face and that Allah will justify it? Yes, it does, because again, the Quran and the Muslim sources allow Muslims to conceal the true agenda of Islam, which is to subjugate the world to Allah and His Messenger. In fact, if you allow me, I'd like to read chapter 9, verse 29 of the Quran, and what Umar, the second caliph of the Islamic Empire, did in light of this injunction.
Okay, why don't you read that, and then we'll let Mr. Ameed respond to what you read.
And I want to read the commentary, and I want him to comment on what his Muslim scholars and his own caliph did in implementing this rule from the Quran.
Okay, go ahead and read it.
Fight those who believe not. Now, note, it doesn't say fight those who fight you. Here's the grounds for fighting. Fight those who believe not in God and the last day, and do not forbid what God and His Messenger have forbidden. Such men as practice not the religion of truth, which in this context means Islam, being of those who've been given the book, i.e. Jews and Christians, until they pay the tribute out of hand and have been humbled. Now, according to Ibn Kathir, this is the meaning of the text and how it was implemented by his second caliph, Umar. So he can't accuse him of being a non-Muslim.
Okay, we're going to have a chance to respond to that when we come back. Hold with me my two friends, my two guests, Nadir Ahmad and Sam Shimon. Is Islam a violent religion? What does the Quran have to say about it? We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
My two guests today, Nadir Ahmad and Sam Shimon, debating the subject of Islam, will also be debating this Saturday, and you can come hear them in person, November 3rd, Hope International University, the Pacific Auditorium. That's on Nutwood Avenue in Fullerton, California. $8 for the public, and it's free for students, and that will be at 2 o'clock p.m. registration at 1:30. Okay, Mr. Shimon had read a portion of the Quran, which he feels the terrorists are frankly taking literally.
Yeah, Bob, I didn't get to read the commentary.
Go ahead. I know. We had the commercial limitation. Yeah. Go ahead, my friend, and continue reading.
This is Ibn Kathir, and his commentary can be found online for those interested to reading it for themselves. It's www.kathir.com. This is what he says. Paying jizya is a sign of kufr and disgrace. Allah said, until they pay the jizya, if they don't choose to embrace Islam with willing submission and defeat and subservience and feel themselves subdued. Now note how he interprets the text, meaning disgraced, humiliated, and belittled. Therefore, Muslims are not allowed to honor the people of Dhimma, meaning the so-called protected people, Jews and Christians, or elevate them above Muslims, for they are miserable, disgraced, and humiliated. Muslim recorded from Abu Huraira that the Prophet said, now this is Nadir's Prophet, do not initiate the greeting to the Jews and Christians, and if you meet any of them in a road, force them to its nearest alley. This is the religion of peace. And finally, this is why the leader of the faithful, Umar ibn al-Khattab, may Allah be pleased with him, demanded his well-known conditions be met by the Christians. These conditions that ensured their continued humiliation, degradation, and disgrace. Now, I can go into some of the conditions to show that This sign of jizya is a tax imposed to humiliate Jews and Christians, and this comes from his prophet, his second caliph, and his Muslim scholar. So I'd like him to explain the data and not try to brush it aside.
Okay, and Mr. Ahmed, it sounds like you're battling kind of a cough there. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm getting over a cold.
Oh, okay,
let me go ahead and respond to a little of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, here's the thing. He's quoting somebody's commentary on the Quran. He didn't quote verses of the Quran. He didn't quote the Prophet Muhammad and what he taught about this. But, you see, here's my point. Now, I want you to listen to everything. And he talked about subjugating the dhimmi. He talked about, you know, taking money in jizya, which is sort of a tax payment from the Christians and the Jews. Now, my question is, how is this inspiring violence in the terrorists today? And my point is, the people who promote this argument, like Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch and other people like him, they're sending us on a wild goose chase. I want to see evidence that the reason why September 11th attacks happened, or these suicide bombs are happening, is because they want jizya money from us and because they want us to pay them taxes. This is nonsense. And so this is my point, that this is why we need a debate. You see, the thing about lying, if I'm really lying to you people, the last thing I want is a debate where I can get exposed in that, okay? The whole purpose of the debate is to find out who is a real liar. Does Islam teach to just randomly lie to people who are not part of their faith? Absolutely not. He was reading from somebody's commentary, but that was a situation when Muslims are under persecution. Now, if I was living in Adolf Hitler's Germany, and he was asking, hey, are you a Muslim? Will I lie? Yeah, I sure will. And so these are beliefs which are supposed to, you know, protect us from just senseless persecution.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I do have a question, because you mentioned yourself that in a time of war it is justified. Well, wouldn't that mean that in a protracted war going on for years and years that lying could then be justified in a protracted way?
Yeah, but who declares war? I mean, can the, like, if you look here in the United States of America, can you declare war on a country, you, Bob? No, you can't. It has to be the head of the state who declares war. So we as individuals, we don't declare war on other nations. And, I mean, if there is a legitimate war, then yes, of course, you can lie. And I tell you, we look inside World War II, one of the things which made the Allied forces victorious was their blatant lying to the Nazis. We lied to the Nazis and the German intelligence on where we were going to invade the beaches in Normandy. We blatantly told them lies, and because of that, it saved thousands of lives. So lying during war is actually a pretty good teaching.
Okay, well, how about a verse from the Quran, which probably people would agree is true, and this isn't a commentary. This is from Surah 5. It says, "Believers, take neither the Jews nor the Christians for your friends. They are friends with one another. Whoever of you seeks their friendship will become one of their number. God does not guide the wrongdoers." Now, I offered no comment. I just read that. How would you respond to that, Mr. Ahmed?
The first thing I would respond is just another wild goose chase by which people are sending us on, by people like Robert Spencer and the other people like him. Now, the first response I would give to that, okay, great. This verse of the Quran, chapter 5, verse 51. Now, tell me, how is that causing people to strap bombs to themselves and killing us?
They hate Jews and they hate Christians and they want to kill them. That's how it's causing it.
This is what I need, Bob. I need to find in their writings, in their lectures, them explicitly saying, hey, I read this in the Quran, chapter 5, verse 51, and because of that, I'm going to kill all you people. And that's what we don't find. Rather, that's other people's interpretation.
Well, it seems that the terrorists are saying that, and you yourself said you renounce a terrorist, but let's let Mr. Shimon respond.
Hold on a second, Bob. Can you please show me where I can find that?
Where you can find what?
Where I can find a terrorist saying that the reason why I killed all these people was because chapter 5, verse 51 told me to do
something. Al-Qaeda did send, like I said, Al-Qaeda sent a letter to America saying something very much like that.
Bob, you have to show me.
Okay, I'd be happy to send that to you. Let's let Mr. Shimon respond.
I can't respond to that verse, though. Can I respond to that?
Well, it sounded like you did respond. Well, go ahead and respond to the verse. Go ahead.
I'd like to respond, but can I just backtrack? Because he brought up so many points. And then I'd like to address them as well as chapter 5, verse 51.
Okay.
First of all, he says that I didn't quote a statement from his prophet. Actually, I did.
Yeah, you quoted that statement and the commentary both.
Yeah, but you see now the commentary, this is where, again, we have to be careful when we're listening to a Muslim polemicist, because, again, what I quoted wasn't simply the opinion of some unknown Muslim. It was a medieval Muslim scholar who was basing it on the tradition of his prophet and his companions. What Nadir doesn't tell his audience is that he's a Salafi Muslim. As a Salafi, he must follow the example and teachings of the first three generations of Muslims, And this is why I quoted Umar ibn al-Khattab, how he implemented chapter 9, verse 29. He simply wants to ignore this and brush it away because he cannot deal with it. Because these very sources, which are quoting his prophet and his prophet's companions, are very damaging to his agenda to try to promote Islam as a religion of peace.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Here is a problem. Here is a problem which we're having tonight. Me and Mr. Shimon wants to talk about two different things, okay? I want to talk about the issues of the current issues of today and how Islam is playing a role in that. That's what I want to talk about. He knows that this thing has nothing to do with the terrorism of today. Rather, it happened 1,400 years ago that somehow inspired Umar. Now, here's what I want to do. Make sure you bring Surah 9, verse 29, to this debate, and then I will refute that and deal with all those people who try to say that somehow we are supposed to start an offensive war against non-Muslims and force them to pay jizya in humiliation. I already told you, Bob, that these issues I will deal with in the debate. But the real issue which we should be discussing here, and actually I've proved my point tonight. I proved that the whole issue of jizya, the whole issue about Surah 9, verse 29, these are all deliberate attempts to mislead the American people into believing in bogus causes for the war on terrorism. Now, I've been putting out this challenge repeatedly inside this discussion. Show me how this influences terrorists to attack us. Can you please explain that to us? And that's why Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch.
Okay, Mr. Shimon, go ahead and respond.
That's why he ran from me, because he knows I'm going to come
out. Okay, well, gentlemen, I can't have you talking over each other, so let me let Mr. Shimon respond. Go ahead, sir.
Nadir Ahmed, because everyone's scared, but let me come back to the issue at hand. My whole point in bringing these passages is to show what will happen when the Muslims have the upper hand. If we really want to understand the situation of Muslims in the West, we have to look at Muhammad's example, because in chapter 33, verse 21 of the Quran, it says that Muhammad is an example to emulate. Depending on the circumstances of Muslims, they'll adapt one of three stages that Muhammad himself underwent in his approach to unbelievers. Stage one, Muhammad preached tolerance when he was surrounded by unbelievers. And he quotes the very same passages that someone like Nadir Ahmed quotes about tolerance and to you, your religion, and to me, my religion. That's stage one, when they're surrounded by unbelievers and do not have the resources to mount an offensive. Then Muhammad implemented stage two. When he left Mecca and went to Medina, and he amassed enough resources and manpower, then he allowed his followers to fight those whom he said attacked them first. And according to the Muslim sources, the pagans did not attack Muhammad. Muhammad started the hostilities by antagonizing them. And then when he subjugated Arabia, he implemented stage three. Now expand Islam offensively until you bring all unbelievers under the hegemony of Islam. These are the three stages that Muhammad implemented. And a good Muslim like Nadir will implement any of these stages depending on his circumstances. This is its relevance to the terrorists.
Can I respond to that?
Okay, go ahead and respond.
Okay, well, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Sam, make sure you bring up these three stages inside this debate tonight, and I will deal with you, and I will deal with Robert Spencer, and I will refute this, really, these bogus ideas, and I will show you that they are not the teachings of Islam. But the reason why I came on this radio show, actually, is to discuss the current issues of today. The problem with you, Sam, is you don't understand what's going on in the world today. And because of that, you want to just stick with what...
Okay, well, one problem is you both want to debate different things, and it's putting me kind of in the middle, but well, I was told we were going to... Well, I was told we were going to discuss the same things as the debate. Let's take this break, and then we'll come right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I want to remind you that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial, and every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear my good friend George Runyon host City Voice, where each week he interviews a different local ministry. That's City Voice with George Runyon on KPRZ. But this is KCBQ. My special guests, Nadir Ahmad and Sam Shimon. Now, gentlemen, just so you understand, I was called by Arabic Christian Perspective, and I was told that we're going to discuss the same thing today that we're discussing in the debate. On the other hand, I understand that Mr. Ahmad would rather talk more about the political things, and Sam, I know you want to talk more about the Quran. And I think the only way I can handle this fairly is to just go by what we decided. I certainly have no problem, Mr. Ahmad, if you'd like to emphasize if there's some things about politics that you don't feel you're getting a chance to say, let me give you a chance to say them now. Okay. But Sam has a right to say the things that he thought he was going to say on the show, too.
Okay, let me first respond to Surah 5, verse 51, where he says, don't take the Jews and the Christians as friends.
Okay, yeah.
Now, this to me is quite irrelevant, because I will quote you dozens of passages inside the debate next week where it shows that we still are supposed to behave kindly towards them, and we are not supposed to behave in a rude manner to them. And
what does this verse mean then?
Excuse me?
What does this verse mean then? You're saying it means that we do take Jews and Christians as our friends?
No. What I meant to say, actually, I just said it doesn't mean that we are supposed to behave, with hostility towards them, and we are supposed to behave kindly towards them. If you look at the Quran, the right position, the right place for the Muslim to be is not so much that guy of who accompanies him to the bars and the nightclubs and stuff like that, but the right place for him is to be that position of a pastor over him and to lead him into truth. So that's really the way how I understand the Quran.
So we're to treat the Jews and Christians kindly, but we're not to actually be their friends.
No, that's not what I said. That's your interpretation. Yeah. As far as, you know, getting very close to them and actually establishing, I guess, really deep relationships with them, no, the Quran advises away from this. But my point here, and this is the reason why we're jumping into the religion, okay? My point here is I showed you very clearly tonight that this verse of the Quran is quite irrelevant. The issue about jizya and so-called, quote, Islamic, supremacy, which people are bringing up, all of this is quite irrelevant to the war on terror that we're facing. And it's because Mr. Shimon, and you also as well, Bob, you have no responses for this. You have no way to show me how this stuff is tied in to what Osama bin Laden is doing or Hamas and Hezbollah.
Well, actually, my response...
You never want to change the topic.
No, my response is that the terrorists are themselves tying it in. The terrorists are claiming that it is because of these commands in the Quran. Now, why can't we let the terrorists just speak for themselves?
Exactly, Bob. Can you please show me where they said that I'm strapping a bomb to myself because the Quran said in 551, don't take Jews as Christians as your friends. I want to see that. And this is my point here, and this is why, and this is a refutation of the so-called Islamofascism week, which we're seeing, that the information that Front Page Mag and people like Robert Spencer and this David Horowitz, they are misleading the American public into...
What is your opinion of the reasons that they're doing it? They're not doing it because of the Quran. Why are they doing it exactly?
Okay. Well, now I'm glad that you asked me that. But Bob and Mr. and Sam, before I give you the reason of what's motivating them, we have to at least accept that, right now, as far as we see, the explanations offered to us by Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch and David Horowitz of Front Page Mag, they don't make any sense because we can't trace this back to anything which they taught that they want to.
These gentlemen aren't here right now to defend themselves. Mr. Shimon, go ahead and respond.
I think Nadir's getting his fair share of the time. I think it's only fair I respond.
Go ahead. You're right. Go ahead and take some time.
Let me repeat the point I made earlier. The reason why I'm going to the Islamic sources is to determine whether what the terrorists are doing is an accurate reflection and extension of Islamic teaching. Nadir just said that Muslims are commanded to be kind to Jews and Christians. Well, again, I'm going to quote Nadir's sources, not Robert Spencer or David Horowitz. This comes from Al-Bukhari. Now, you tell me how kind this is, Bob. And if you tell me this is being respectful towards Jews and Christians, this is what his prophet is reported as saying. Abu Huraira reported that the prophet said, do not give the people of the book the greeting first. Force them to the narrowest part of the road. Now, I don't know in whose definition this would be considered kindness, but this is not the only thing. Umar, his caliph, when he subjugated Jews and Christians,
These are the conditions he imposed on them. Now you tell me if this is kind and gentle and loving. We made a condition on ourselves that we will neither erect in our areas a monastery, church, sanctuary for a monk, nor restore any place of worship that needs restoration. We will respect Muslims by moving from our places that we sit in if they choose to sit in them. We will not imitate their clothing, their caps, their turbans, their sandals, hairstyles, etc. We won't hang swords on our shoulders, collect weapons of any kind, or carry these weapons. We will not publicize our books or our bells, and when we mourn, we will do so quietly in our houses of worship. Is this the kindness that Nadir wants to convince the West that Islam presents? And this is from his caliph. This isn't Robert Spencer. This is Umar ibn al-Khattab. This is what the West has to look forward to if Muslims implement the caliphate.
Okay, Mr. Shimon, let's let Mr. Ahmad go ahead and respond. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, and inside the same reference of Bukhari, when a man was slaughtering his sheep, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, make sure you give a portion to your Jewish neighbor. When a man was watering his canal, growing vegetation, he said, make sure you pour water on your neighbors, referring to the non-Muslim neighbor. So yeah, you will find things out there which some people may find objectionable, but you'll also find exactly what I told you, acts of kindness and charity to the people, to the Jews and the Christians.
Well, then how do we reconcile?
Can I respond to his other points, please?
Go ahead.
Okay, now the thing is about the people, about not building churches and not carrying weapons. Now here is the problem. You see, Omar was negotiating with the Christians, and the problem is not with Omar. The problem is with the Christians who on their own free will gave up these rights so that they could live inside the Islamic Empire and get benefit from the wealth which it was attaining. Now the thing is about Omar, I mean, again, this is about Islam and what Islam teaches. But I want to defend Omar as well. Now,
that?
He might have... Let me just...
One second.
My turn to talk.
Just hold tight. Go ahead.
Let me just make this last point. Now, the thing about Omar, you have to also understand, he saw a Christian man, an old Christian man starving on the street. And he asked, well, this is terrible. We take jizya money from this guy when he is old, when he was young, but when he's old, we don't give him anything. So right there, he said, the money which we take from the jizya, we're going to give to him. And that was a birth of the social security system. And that's the first time the world has seen the social security system was from this man, Omar, when he gave money from the jizya to him. And so you got to read it within...
Okay, let's let Mr. Shimon respond. Yeah, I know you could each give speeches, but we have to keep this a dialogue. Go ahead, Mr. Shimon.
He just said that Umar did this and the Christians agreed to it. What he did not tell you is that the reasons why Christians agreed to it because they had no choice. And let me finish the statement from Umar. When I gave this document to Umar, he added, we will not beat any Muslim, meaning the Christians who live under the rule of Islam. These are the conditions that we set against ourselves and followers of our religion in return for safety and protection. Because when Umar attacked Shems, that area in Jerusalem, Syria, the Christians did not have the manpower to defend themselves, so they were forced to accept these conditions or be killed. Those are the conditions that Umar imposed, not because the Christians wanted to. They had no other choice. So Nadir, again, is distorting what the sources say. Now, if you want me to address 551, I'll be more than happy to, depending on how much time I have.
Go ahead, Mr. Ahmad, respond to that.
No, the people, the Christians at the time, they could have negotiated whatever they want. They were not forced. They could have, and the problem is really the problem which Mr. Shimon is having is that he has a problem with the Christians who gave up their right to evangelize. But anyway, the whole thing is about what Islam teaches. We as Muslims, we are not obligated to follow everything what the people who after Muhammad, what they negotiated. And when we talk about Islam, we got to talk about what the Quran teaches and what Muhammad taught. Now, if we were to talk about what happened to, you know, what people did after Muhammad, well, then we're going to be here all day, and we really can't say that, you know, we're dealing with...
What about anti-Semitic...
Now, let me make one last point.
Okay, but you got to make it in a sound bite, because we have to keep this a dialogue.
Okay. Now, I got a question for Mr. Shimon. I'm just wondering, what exactly is your education level? Did you even go to college? Can you please tell me this?
I thought we agreed, no personal attack.
Yeah, that sounded a little patronizing.
The world and still Islam be a false religion. So stop trying to divert the attention on the debate and focus on the issues. Now, can I refute his claim about Umar?
Yeah, gentlemen, we have just a few minutes, and our audience is more interested in your points than where you two went to college. Go ahead.
Anonymous all the time because he can't refute the argument, so he attacks the person. Now, can I address what he just said about
Go ahead.
Umar?
Go ahead.
Okay, now he just said, we don't follow the example of anyone after Muhammad. Now, again, this is Tuqya coming into play, chapter 3, verse 28, because he's a Salafi, and I invite people to study what Salafis believe. Salafis believe that you follow and implement the Islam as practiced by the first three generations of Muslims, including Umar. In fact, Umar is called one of the rightly guided caliphs, not one of the misguided caliphs. So this is the example that Muslims are to follow. This is why Ibn Kathir cites Umar as an example for the Muslim community to implement when they have the upper hand. So this is, again, a smokescreen.
Okay, gentlemen, we're down to our last couple of minutes, and I want to be able to let me publicize the debate one more time, though, since that's the main reason you're here. It's called The Peaceful Islam is on Trial. Come and hear the verdict. Saturday, November 3rd, Hope International University, Pacific Auditorium, on 2500 East Nutwood Avenue, Fullerton, California. Students are free, $8 for the public. The debate is at 2 o'clock p.m. Registration is at 1:30. Mr. Ahmed, what about present comments that are made? What about present comments that are made about the Jews, like when Ahmadinejad speaks in the name of Islam and says Israel shouldn't even exist? I mean, he's saying that in the name of Islam, or would you want to categorically renounce him?
Well, let me just sort of respond to what Mr. Shimon said, if I can. The Tuqya, what he's calling about, you know, that we're supposed to be lying and stuff like that, let me tell you something. What we have discovered from tonight's discussion, just between the three of us, the person who's doing the deception is a person who's misleading the American public by providing them bogus, false, and misleading information of why we're of what.
Okay, my two friends, you're going to have to save it for the ring on Saturday. The time was far too short, but I do want to thank both of you very much for your time, Mr. Ahmed, Mr. Shimon. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time to come on the program, and I will look forward to meeting both of you on Saturday. I'll bet the three of us would have a fun time together one way or the other. We'll see you both then. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.
This is Roy Stewart.